we're always investing back into the business. So I think the first year we only maybe took home like 5% because we're just buying so much machinery. Because the way I like to build my business, if I can get the machineries to do the work as much as possible, and then the employees do a fraction of that work, then the profit margins are going to be bigger later on.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Upflip Podcast. I'm Alex Freeman. Today we've got Vlad Kuksenko on our podcast, who managed to build an empire on Etsy using his knack for graphic design. Vlad was able to scale his store among the top 1% in a matter of a year and is currently making 2 times more than his competitors. Currently, he sells dog collars on Etsy and has dominated the platform in this niche. In this episode, we'll talk about how to start an Etsy shop, making your first sale, navigate your way around conversion-based designing, maximizing ROI from paid Etsy ads, sustaining your business in the long term, and a whole lot more. Let's dive right in. Vlad, thanks for joining us.
Oh man, it's good to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And just kick things off, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started with your Etsy shop.
Yeah, well, it's funny thing is I used to do actually physical therapy. I was a physical therapy assistant, and it was a completely different direction. But I loved art and I loved everything about art. When I took my physical therapy program, it was an online program. So I had to buy a computer. And at that time, the internet, kind of this social media internet wasn't a big thing. But I was like, I'm always as an artist, I'm like thinking, hey, how can I make art with this computer? And then sure enough, graphic design and, you know, web design and all that start to come out. And I love that. But I did that on the side, because I was raised to kind of like, hey, you got to have a job, you got to support your family, you're the man of the house. And so I'm like, oh man, I got to get a safer route than just artist. Because, you know, the joke is that what's the difference between an artist and a box of pizza? Well, a box of pizza can feed a family of three. So it's just like, you know, that the option of being an artist was not an option. So I kind of went to that medical route. But on the side, I was always like, man, I want to do art and I want to do graphic design. And I went kind of freelancing. And then over time, I had these guys, they sold on Etsy and they're really successful. And they're like, hey, why don't you design for us? And they paid me a retainer, which is kind of nice for a graphic designer if you have a retainer, because that gives some stability. And everything else was history. I started learning more about Etsy and what they were doing. And my design started to really bring them business, because I was designing from a very conversion-based design. You know, what does the customer want, instead of just designing what I thought was good. And it profited them. And then that's how I was like, hey, I could probably make it my, you know, make it out there myself.
That's incredible. So how long from when you opened your shop did it take for you to become the number one pet product store? And what was kind of the most important factor in reaching that position?
Oh man, I think it was like just a little over a year and a half. So I reached my 1% at a little past a year, and then to become the top pet product store according to erank.com in volume of sales. Now, if people go on there, they'll see that there's other stores, but that's only because it considers the overall sales. Mm-hmm. But in terms of daily sales, I'll be top. And so, but that position, it took me about a little over a year and a half to get. And I think some of the very most important things that helped me to get there was never to be just stuck on one thing, but to expand to new products as much as I can, to provide as high quality as I can and at a fair price, you know. And so with Etsy, it's handmade, it's work from home. And so usually they charge a lot because it takes them a lot to make, but I had to think about manufacturing instead of homemade. Mm-hmm. And so doing that allowed me to really reduce the price, and I pursued other products and other, as much as I could, just spread myself far. And I discovered dog collars. And those dog collars, what I do is I print the fabric, and out of that fabric, I make the strap, and out of that strap, I make the dog collar, which allows me to spread myself through keywords. I mean, I can go anywhere from Christmas dog collar, pink polka dot dog. I mean, for any season that you want, I started to spread myself in terms of keyword volume. And that really set me apart from any other shop.
That's a really interesting blend of a creative outlook and SEO skill. And I'm just curious, what kind of as you got started in there and going through the products, is it an SEO thing that brings you there first, or is it a creative thing and then you branch out into the SEO portion of it?
Yeah, it's hard. It's like, it's almost like it's weaved together, because like I think of art as communicating to the customer, to anybody that's looking at the art piece, if you're just doing it for the sake of art. And if you can't communicate to anybody, I personally believe that it's not really a true art form. True art form ought to communicate. But when you go onto the market, you have to communicate by them being able to pay for it, right? Is that what they wanted, you know? And so I feel like there's almost like a two-sided thing to that. So I see that they want, say, a blush floral, and I provide that exactly how they wanted it. And so that's like, there's almost a dance back and forth, but it's always beginning with, hey, what are they looking for? What do they want? And I'll design that and use my creativity to supply that.
So are there certain types of businesses that do especially well on Etsy? Obviously, you're doing quite well in the dog collar niche. And on the flip side of that, are there types of businesses that Etsy isn't ideal for?
So I think Etsy is a really, really cool place. It's more of a want-based platform, not a need-based. So like Google would be like, hey, I need a plumber or I need screwdrivers. I'm going on Google or Amazon, right? Etsy is a lot more want-based, something that would sell well, like something that would advertise well on Pinterest, on Instagram, just something visual. And so anything that it's mostly a want-based. So if you want to sell screwdrivers, you're not going to be successful. But if you want to sell something that is a want-based, like, oh, I really want to have that in my house, or I want my living room to look like that. Those things tend to do well. And within that, I think that one of the bigger, and this is where I kind of decided to go, is custom or made to order, personalized things, because it cuts China out of the picture, because China can't make made to order. They like to make things by bulk. And so that's how they compete on price. But if you can personalize it, all of a sudden they're no longer competition. And so at the moment you put a personalization on those dog collars, that's it. You can charge a higher price. And so, and people are going to Etsy for that specific reason, because it's going to be made for them specifically. So those products tend to do well. And like I said, anything that's they tend to not do well. Also, I find a lot of people want to invent something, they're like, oh, I think people will love this, but there's no keyword that they're looking for or attached to that product that customers are not going to find. And so those shops, they tend to not do so well.
The dichotomy between want-based versus need-based is particularly interesting, because I think so much of marketing theory is, what is the problem that your consumer is having and how does your product solve it? And we don't necessarily think of, I want a rose gold dog collar as a problem, but is it kind of the same marketing theory for going need-based versus want-based?
Yes. Yeah. And to that point also, it's nice if you can have both. And I think dog collar is kind of both, because you have to have a dog collar. You have to have an ID that they can contact the owner if the dog does get lost. But once you put that with like something I want, a blush floral gold medal or buckle dog collar, then it becomes even more, you know, higher affinity score to that one. And so there's a lot of different, if say a person dresses up a certain way and they want to match that, and they're like, hey, I have this need, I want to match my dog to my outfit or whatever, you know? And so if I provide that, that's already solving their need that they want to have. And sometimes need and a want are kind of overlapping. Like if you do wedding industries, by the way, wedding industries are huge on Etsy, right? Obviously you need to have some decorative elements. So those become kind of more into the I need to have it, right? And it's almost blended with I want. And those tend to do well as well, because it's a merge between those two in some way.
Back to kind of Etsy basics, I guess. What are the most important parts of an Etsy storefront? And like, does the design of the storefront have a big impact on sales?
Right. That's actually, it's a good segue, because when you're thinking of, hey, these are a want-based platform, the visuals is everything. You know, they're looking at, does it look good? And not only that, you have to play on that emotion. Like they have to have an emotional response when you go to the store. And if you can achieve that, then that's going to give you a better conversion rate just generally, because they've came to the store with a want-based attitude, right? And if you're supplying that to them constantly with all your amazing product or your amazing looking store, they're like, for example, if you're doing a home decor, you're like, oh, I want my store or home to look like that. And if I buy these products, it's going to be a one step closer to that. So that's our strength in the want-based product area.
And then what are people often getting wrong when they go set up their Etsy shop? And what is wrong about that?
Yeah, well, see, a lot of people, they go in there. There's two people. There's people that go in there so emotionally attached to their idea that they have, that they're like, when I start to talk to them, it's almost, I can't even let myself finish until they're like, oh, I have this idea. And it's like, they don't even listen. They don't listen to the market. They're just like, I have this idea. And they're like, well, first of all, is there a keyword attached to it? And second of all, have you researched if people actually want this, right? Do the keyword research. And the other one, they're just like, hey, I want to make some money on Etsy. And they're ready to research everything they can. But they start to add all these random things to their shop, and it becomes this quote unquote general store that is just overwhelming. Customer goes on there, they sell everything from planners to wall hangings to wedding decor. Like it just doesn't make sense. It's not unified. It's not a niche store. Well, it doesn't have to be a niche store, but it has to have some form of uniformity that you are an expert in this area, that you're a craftsman or you're a master in this area, whether it's wood or fabric or whatever the case is.
So if somebody does work in multiple mediums, perhaps, or have multiple ideas like that, does it make more sense that they would almost want to go through the process of setting up multiple stores so those all aren't in one under one heading? Or is that not even, they shouldn't maybe even go down that road just because they'll be stretched so thin?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you can open up as many stores as you want. I haven't really come across any rule that you can't sell the same product on a different store. But yeah, I think it's a great idea to open up another store as long as you have enough products to fill up that store, right? If you just have one product, you don't want to open up a store with one product, but you want to create, I always talk about this, that you want to create this aisle experience. Like you go to Target, you want to get yourself a gift wrapping. They're going to have tape, they're going to have boxes and all these kind of things to wrap your gift. And so you want to create that. When they come to your store, do they feel like they can buy more than just one? And also that reduces your ad cost, because if you're spending money on their on the advertisement for them to come to your store, you want them to buy more stuff. And you know, you show yourself like you're an expert at this niche that you are presenting to them. So I think especially if you're in multiple mediums, you could definitely explore different products as well, because you have such a variety of abilities. I think that's a very appropriate course of action.
I really like that aisle reference, because you would have the wrapping paper, the boxes, the tape, but you wouldn't have spaghetti in that aisle.
Yeah, exactly. Even though spaghetti could sell really well, but doesn't mean that it belongs there.
Yeah. And how does the pricing structure on Etsy work? And how much should a new Etsy seller budget for kind of setting up their storefront and getting their first products to market?
I'm kind of very aggressive. I'm okay with losing money in the beginning. I underprice all my competitors, and not to show that I have a cheap quality product. It's more like I would almost say a hack, and I don't recommend this on every product, but I like to sometimes just underbid my customer my competitors. And then later, once I've ranked to a substantial page or ranking, then I can adjust my price. And my rule of thumb is usually in the middle. I don't like to be too cheap. I don't like to be too expensive. Because usually people on Etsy, they don't race to the bottom. They know it's handmade. They know it's made to order. So they're okay to not look for the cheapest price. But sometimes when they see a product too priced at too high, they're saying, well, there's this product that's also really good. It seems like it has a lot of good reviews. And so I'm going to go with that one. And so it's just a rule of thumb, for me at least.
Within that, is there any kind of advice on specifically setting margin on a specific product? Or is it just kind of like letting the market set that rule of thumb for you and you find the middle ground?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, sometimes I do look at what my competitors are doing. But I think it goes down to what's your manufacturing like. And that's the thing. A lot of people that go on Etsy, one of their problems is that they make a product and it takes them just too long to make. I remember when I started doing dog collars, all of my competitors were doing it was priced high. And when I started sewing my first strap, I realized, it takes some time. So I had to create some templates, foldable things that made the process really fast. And I got it down to making a strap in like a minute and a half, which is still too slow. Now it takes me seconds to make a strap, but that gave me an edge, and I was able to bring the price lower. And so as far as profit margins, it really doesn't matter at that point, because you're competing with your competitors and you have so much more elbow room on Etsy, because like I said, they don't race to the bottom. And it's not like Amazon. You got to sell a dog collar for $9. You can sell it for $20. $35, and it's not a big issue. So you have a lot of elbow room, just as long as you get your manufacturing or really home manufacturing done right.
Can you talk to us about conversion-based designing and how you can use that to your advantage on Etsy?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't actually realize this as how big of a deal this is. For example, if somebody say looking for a blush floral dog collar, you want to satisfy the keyword. If you satisfy the keyword to like, this is what they intended, then they're going to most likely buy. Because if they're saying like, hey, I want something like that, and they type in plush floral dog collar, and that is literally what they thought that they wanted, it's right there. They're most likely will buy it. But it's all about what do they intend it to buy. So like if you type in soccer or football in America, it's going to be different than it is on the other side of the world. So the intention is always how the algorithm works. So when you're designing on a conversion-based design, you want to look up and research what do they look for? What are they favored on Etsy? That's a feature. You can see what they favored. Then you go on Pinterest and you start looking. What does blush floral dog collars look like? And then you realize it's in the wedding space. And they okay. So what kind of floral are they looking for? Is it roses? And then you discover, hey, it's wild flower. you know, type florals. And then, so you, then you start to design to that specific want or intention. And so when you design a blush floral dog collar that meets the wedding, you know, there's a lot of white and there's these wild florals to it, you have a lot more of a success rate to sell that on a keyword blush floral dog collar than somebody that just guessed.
And when you talk about kind of doing that, that analysis, can you kind of give us a rundown of where are you researching keywords? And then what kind of those steps, what is the step-by-step process that you might go through to create that design?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it depends what you're researching. So if you're researching for keywords, like you don't know what to sell on Etsy, then that would be a really good one to go on erank.com. It's a great platform. It just gives you kind of like, hey, what else do they search with that keyword? And what are the, has the highest search volume, things like that. But I really like to use Etsy. And the way I like to do that is by looking at the reviews. Like, let's say I kind of doing some, just looking through some products, I see that, hey, like this one's selling really well. How would I know that? I would look at the reviews and see the volume of reviews they're getting on a daily, day-to-day basis. So if they're getting a review at least once a day, you know they're selling roughly 5 to 10 orders per day because the ratio is like one review per 5 to 10 orders. And so I know that, hey, if I get to at least where this competitor is at, I should be getting at least that much. And so that's one of the ways you'll realize, hey, this, this might be, if they're getting like 5 reviews each day, I'm like, okay, that's it. No brainer. I'm doing this product. And I'll look at their keywords, what they're targeting and where they're ranking for, and I'll mimic that. And then I'll go, like I said, when you're doing design and you're trying to do a conversion-based design, then I'll see, hey, what is the market looking for when they're typing up a particular keyword? So, and if you're doing like thumbnails, if you're doing the style of your product, what you, what it should look like, or even the style of your store, you can do that when you're looking at Pinterest, you're looking at Instagram, you're looking at all these ideas that people come across to before they come to Etsy and looking for their product.
I want to ask about your monthly revenues and kind of profit margins. And I'd love to hear it in a perspective of where you were, you know, a year and a half ago and how that has grown, changed, and what a beginner might be able to expect to where they can grow it to.
Yeah, that's a good question. So in the beginning, we were coming close. We were always like, you would get a substantial amount of money coming from Etsy because we did a weekly where they weekly dump in money to your account, however much you sold. But like, we would always just dance around that zero. We just always was like, we were always investing back into the business. So I think the first year we only maybe took home like 5% because we were just buying so much machinery. Because the way I like to build my business, if I can get the machineries to do the work as much as possible, and then the employees do a fraction of that work, then the profit margins are be bigger later on. So it was just investing in a machinery, into a large amount of inventory, trying to have inventory be shipped by sea because there's components like buckles and things like that you want to order in larger quantity. So we were kept throwing everything at the business and just kept enough to live off of. Theoretically, if you just consider like the marketing, if you just consider the products and all that stuff, besides the machine, besides if you want to grow, it's usually like 50%, 60%, depending how well your manufacturing is going. And so that would be, but like I said, the first year we were just only enough to live off of, which was like 5-10%. And this year we're definitely increased that to 10%, but we're doing other things with that money now, more like 10-15%, just, you know, trying out different products. My wife started her own Etsy shop mid last year. And so we're putting in some money in that. So, but we're always throwing it back in the business. So I can't really say exactly the percentage, but if theoretically it's about 50%. So.
And then what's that best strategy to increase traffic to an Etsy shop? And what are you currently doing in terms of marketing, and what has worked and what hasn't?
Yeah. So I think ultimately ranking is probably the best way. If you can rank higher to the keywords, to really those big volume keywords, you're going to obviously going to get better results. So whatever that takes to rank your product, that's what you want to do. So Etsy is, it's really good about letting just regular people sell on Etsy that don't really know how to find the keywords or how to target, how to do like advertisement where they target certain keywords. Etsy pretty much says, hey, how much money do you want to spend today? And then they take care of the rest. But with people like me that want to grow that shop beyond the regular person, we have to get creative. And the way I like to do that, well, I run advertisement on all my products. I basically tell Etsy on all my products, just keep running ads. But then I also, I like to, when I just launch a product, like I said, I like to undercut like the pricing. I might actually go at a loss, but that's fine. That's a sort of an investment. It's like a, that's like a faster advertisement for me, because I only spend the money at a loss when I sell the product. But with advertising, you'll spend it whether they bought it or not. And so I like to invest money that way as well, just because it ensures that I'll collect that data, whether the conversion rate, whether they, when they saw the thumbnail, did they click on it, they scroll past, you know, things like that. I'm still collecting and I'm ensuring that that data will be collected. So I like to spend my money at a loss when I begin my product, but then adjust it accordingly.
And how does that marketing with Etsy work? Is it just a like a button you click on the site, or is it, do you create different ad copy as well that is different from the product copy?
Yeah, it's very simple. It's literally just you put an overall price. You say, hey, I want to spend $100 a day, $1,000 a day, and then you just check off which products you want to be part of that bunch. Then that's pretty much it, which I wish there was more. When I just started Etsy, there was, you can put like, you can spend $100 a day on one product and it'll just rank you to the top right away. And then, you know, but they took that feature off and it's just really just a basic. And so you kind of have to get creative with ranking your product. And I think another, a very important one is try to get as much keywords or as much products that can reach as much keywords or satisfy as much keywords as possible, because you're getting traffic from all these little corners of Etsy that you wouldn't have thought of that buy your product when they come to your store. So like I started selling key fobs that match the dog collar because I'm making straps already. So I thought, hey, why not make key fobs? And all of a sudden I'm getting traffic from people that are looking for keychains, key fobs, personalized key fobs, and so on. And now, you know, my sales keep going up because I'm introducing new keywords that is going out there on the Etsy platform.
And just to kind of give people a sense of, you know, You just said it used to be that you could spend $100 a day and you would rank right to the top. How are you finding that shifts? Like what is a typical daily spend for you on Etsy?
Yeah, it's so on advertisement, I spend like $300. I've set it to as max as I can because they used to actually be able to spend more. But I put like $1,000 a day. Like I'm okay if you spend it, but obviously we never do. And like during Christmas time, we do because there's so much traffic. And Etsy is really about giving everybody an equal shot. And that's why if your listeners are wanting to get on Etsy, it's very fair. It's not like this one guy that's just outselling everybody and he's just trampling over everybody. Etsy really provides that level playing field. And even like somebody that's willing to spend $1,000 a day, he can't. Like me, I would love to spend that, but I can't because Etsy likes to give other people that shot to be to the top of the, you know, keyword without having that much reviews, without having that much traction prior. So it every single listing begins from the same point. So, and you know, I wish it was different because obviously you get to a place you're like, I wish I can go more, but then you understand like, hey, this is providing a living for a lot more people than just me. So, so I'm thankful. And I'm, you know, I kind of step aside for that.
So with that in mind, where it's not necessarily an advertising platform where cash is king, what advice can you offer for maximizing that ROI from paid Etsy ads?
Yeah. And that's actually right. Cash is not king. It's about your creativity. People on Etsy are creative people. They make things with hands. They come up with some crazy, I mean, you can go on rabbit holes on how, like the kind of stuff people make there. So it's about like how creative are you? How do you provide, like how well can you satisfy the keywords with your creativity? And if you can do that, I mean, you might not even have to spend a dime on advertisement. It'll just sell by itself. I've seen stores that literally have three or four products, but that one product just shoots to the top because it's just so well made. So yeah, it's really visuals. Do you kind of trigger that emotional response when they see your product typing a certain keyword?
So another two-part marketing question here for you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the best marketing strategy for a new Etsy shop. You're obviously getting ready to in the process of launching another Etsy shop itself. So two ways to look at it. One, somebody who starts out without a marketing budget and someone who starts out maybe with a marketing budget, what's the kind of best way to utilize that ad spend at the beginning?
Right. Okay. So if I say, if you're not, you don't have a much of a budget, which that's where I started off with. Well, first of all, make sure that you do the correct keyword research because you don't have that much money to explore. Make sure that you really, you know, double down on like, hey, what is selling? And I don't care if it's toilet seat covers, you know, what is selling? You know, it's not about what you think you should sell. So I think that's going to be fundamental. And then you find the most creative way to make it as cheap as possible, meaning so that it doesn't take you that long to make, because you need as much profit as you possibly could get. Now, if you are, say you have some capital and you're ready to, you know, so I would say that try to find as much as much products, expand your keyword library on your shop so that like you can, like I said, you can be found at every little corner of Etsy, and then obviously put ads on all your products and at some products go at a loss. And that, because you have the ability to do that, that's going to shoot your store pretty quick to the top, or at least in volumes of sales.
When you're writing the product description, what goes into a great description on Etsy? And how does the wording of the title and description make a difference in whether a product comes up in a search result?
Yeah, and that's actually, this is going to be giving your view, listeners some hope, because I'm horrible at writing. I was actually looking into I looked into like AI writing. I was like, maybe because somebody else could write for me. So, but currently I look at my competitors. What are they writing? What keywords do they use? What's the tone? And I think that's one of my, if you were to ask me a question, what is my weak point in my store? I wish I could have better. Like I'm sure if you read my description, he's like, oh, that's a spelling error. Or, you know, I wouldn't have said it that way. So, but from what I see, that descriptions, as long as your customers really know what your product is, from being on your listing not that long, I'm actually more a bigger proponent of, if you can explain what you need to explain in your keywords with a photo that they're going to look at, that's going to be better for your store, because that shows you a better conversion rate. They're just going to see and understand what it is. Like, for example, sizing, right? Instead of writing out what your dog collar sizing is, just, you know, unfold all the sizes of collars and do graphics on it to where it says this many inches and this width and this, you know, if you can do it with photos, that would be best. Because I find that on description, it doesn't matter for SEO. It really matters on the title and the tags. If you have a good keywords, and it really works for SEO, but the description, it really doesn't matter as much. So that's a benefit for me, because I'm a graphic designer. So I try to communicate as much as I can on the listing photos, because it's so much faster for them to see it, realize it, and buy it. Because that, like I said, improves your conversion rate.
I'm glad you brought up the tags, because I would love for you to explain what they are, why they matter, and how you can write a great one.
Yeah. So tags, pretty much you're telling Etsy what this product is, and it needs to know, hey, where should I put this product? You know, if I say I sell a dog collar, I need to make sure that it knows a dog collar, some design elements, what buckle colors I have. If somebody's looking for a black buckle, metal, you know, whatever, and they keep writing the designs, Etsy would be like, oh, I know where to find that. So that's really important for the Etsy algorithm. Now, how you write that, a lot of people have this, the way they, let's say that you sell a t-shirt, and they'll write tag one, you know, say it's a bridesmaid t-shirt. So let's try bridesmaid t-shirts, wedding t-shirt, and so on. They're repeating the word t-shirt, even though you don't need to. Etsy doesn't really care on the tag portion that you write keywords that make sense. You can write bridesmaid t-shirts, blush, wedding, proposal, bridesmaids. Like you can cram them in, that's fine, because it'll take bits and pieces from your keywords to make one three-tiered keyword if they're looking for that. But it's just like a trick that I've discovered that works for me. The first three tags that I do, I'm okay repeating a certain keyword, because initially Etsy will take those tags as is to try to test them out. Like if there's a high ranking, for example, if I'm selling bridesmaid t-shirt, and then like bridezilla t-shirt, let's say those are the top, I'm okay repeating the keyword t-shirt, because it'll take those two or three keywords and it'll test them out. And if it's a high volume keyword, then I'm going to get results right away, like, or sooner at least. So I like to do that on the first three tags, repeat a certain keyword. But after that, just cram them in as much as you can. But again, make sure that you do keyword research. And when you do that, you then have the correct set of keywords that have high volume of traffic, and your listing will do a lot better when you try to rank on as many keywords as possible. Even if it's just okay on many keywords, then really good on one keyword. That's a better option to do tags. Also, that creates a lot more stabilities in your sales, because if you're ranking really nice on bridesmaid t-shirt, but then if you start derank, let's say you go on second page, your sales just tank. But if you rank okay on a lot of variety of keywords, then you're going to have a lot more stability in your business.
Are you using any tools to find those iterations of keywords? So maybe you found like the keyword that seems like it's got a high search volume, and then you want to look for those iterations to fill the tags. Are you using any tools for that, or is that just a creative brainstorming?
Yeah, well, I definitely use E-Rank. I think E-Rank is a good one. And then I use my competitors' listings. So I just pretty much jot down what are they ranking on. Because sometimes like this, there'll be one product that sells really or ranks really well on the top keyword. But if you look, you'll find that that's the only keyword he's ranking on. So, and then I'll find his competitors that will sell on many different keywords. And you look at the reviews and you see that, hey, this guy has 10 times more reviews than this guy. I want to look at the keywords he's ranking on. And then you find that he has a variety of keywords that he's ranking. And even though he might be like on the second level of ranking on those keywords, but he's ranking on a lot more. And so I take those examples. So I would say examples of a competitors, I would go on E-Rank and then just plain old Etsy, just typing in and then to search and see what's the autofill and stuff like that.
And then how do customer reviews affect the visibility and traffic of an Etsy shop? Are there any strategies you can share for getting more positive reviews?
Yeah. So I think for the SEO portion of it, I think it's a factor. It's not a big factor, but I've seen listings that rank to the top having like 2 reviews. So it's not always the main factor, but I feel like it does play a role in it. I think that some of the best ways to actually get good reviews is be very clear in what they're buying. Like if it's sizing, if there's something they're not seeing, if like, let's say that a dog tag is the size of a quarter, then maybe put a quarter in next to a dog tag in the photo so that they have there's some clarity to what they're buying. Cause then if they get it and it's the wrong product, they're going to be responding, with a poor review. The other thing is obviously improve your quality and don't oversell something. Don't just, increase the saturation on your product. Make sure that it's fair in terms of, the color and the size and make sure you're not cheating out on a price, say that, hey, it's only $9.99, but when they click on it and they buy it, they realize, oh, it's the smallest size. Like, just communicate to the customer like, hey, you're paying this much for these, but if you pay more, this is what you're getting, so that there's some clarity. Because people don't like to be tricked. They're intending to buy. They're really excited, especially if you convince them like, hey, this is a really cool product, and they have this emotional response with your product. They love it. They add it to your cart. They bought it. And when they received it, it's not what they intended. You want to make sure that that's consistent with what they're seeing.
What kind of products are trending right now on Etsy, and how can a new owner figure out what products are top sellers?
Yeah, well, right now we're in the beginning of the year, so anything planner, anything losing weight, anything organizers, like if you have a printer, and you have like, you can go to Joann's, get a $200 Cricut cutter, and you can make stickers, sticker labels for pantry labels. Those things are selling really well. I mean, you can go anywhere from that to doing wall hangings. People are taking down their Christmas decors. They want their wall looks empty, stuff like that sells really well at the beginning of the year. I would say anything personalized. If you can go on the personalized side of things, it's going to be a really nice, quick growth for your shop.
So this brings us to a section of the show that we call our Fan Blitz questions. So these are coming from our YouTube channel. And so if you haven't checked out the Upflip YouTube channel yet, make sure you go over to YouTube, check out Upflip and also the Upflip blog. So I got 4 quick questions for you. These are going to be quick hit answers.
All right, let's do it.
First, JRH asked, how did you get noticed on Etsy when starting out? Did most of your business come from Etsy ads or organic searches?
They started from organic searches. I really looked on the, like I said, ranking was my number one priority. If I can rank it better, I'll get more exposure.
Matt W. asked, how do you do product research? How do you find good niches in areas that seem too competitive?
Well, I think keyword, like we were talking about, utilizing E-Rank, utilizing Etsy, just the search Etsy, looking at your competitors, what are they selling? When you're seeing the competition, there's like a lot of competition. That shouldn't actually matter. Competition on Etsy is really easy to beat. It's usually somebody that wanted to start an Etsy shop. They started, but then they never followed up with that. Competition really doesn't matter. Even if there's a high saturation of competition on Etsy, it's actually very easy to beat them by just good photos, good price, well-designed shop, and those should be enough to beat 90% of your competition.
Sylvester Aneo asked, do you like dogs or are you just in it for the money?
that's funny. If my friends are listening, they'll be laughing because I actually don't have a dog. I was all just, what does the market want? What can I do that creates me as much keywords as possible? And I realized dog collars and the variety of different dog collars or in terms of design. So
this is a me follow-up. Has any of this made you want to get a dog?
Yeah, no, here's the thing. Because we've invested everything into the business, we hadn't had a chance to buy a house. And so we rent, and all our landlords say, nope, no house. And it, like, we've looked for places to let us have dogs, and they're like, nope. And so I would love to have a dog.
And then finally, for the fan blitz questions, eBay Addicts asked, how do you get started? What's the startup cost?
Yeah. So the startup, like I said, you can go to Joann's, get $200 of a Cricut cutter and start, you get some vinyl rolls and just personalize wedding cups for all that matters, or make, like I said, pantry labels that sells really nice. You can personalize anything with literally, like I said, $200 vinyl cutter, or you can get a laser machine for maybe a couple thousand, or a sublimation printer that sublimates on mugs and Christmas ornaments. And then you can go as high as $4,000 on an embroidery machine to start personalizing, anywhere from pillows to Christmas stockings. So it really depends where you want to start off. We start off with just a simple sewing machine at couple thousand dollars and some inventory, and then grew up to, buying an embroidery machine and so on and so on.
That is our fan blitz questions for this episode. So thank you for doing those for us. And thank you to everybody who's sending questions. Again, check out our YouTube channel, Upflip, and also the Upflip blog, and ask us questions in there. And you may hear them show up in a future show. So Vlad, a few more questions from me here. Tell us about your workflow from product design, manufacturing, packaging, and how do all those roles break down? Who's responsible for what? And what software or tools are you using to make sure things run smooth and efficient?
So now, it was different when I just started. I did everything, like I said, from doing photography to research to sewing to, but I did outsource my engraving to those guys, the guys that I worked for. I made a deal with them that they would be engraving. Now I do it in-house, but I use ShipStation. It's a package fulfillment. Basically, orders come in. You can use ShipStation to get all the details you need for like personalization, sizing, and things like that that you've created on your Etsy. And so that allows us to then build the whole structure around it. We print the package slips, and then that package slip will be attached to a buckle that has been engraved. And that buckle goes around throughout the shop. Like the straps are made, and then the buckle will be strapped with a strap. And then that strap and buckle now makes its way to the CNC machine that sews the box stitching, and then and so on. And then we scan package and things like that. As much of a bulk as we possibly can, even though it's made to order, we do everything by bulk. We'll engrave it by bulk. We'll make the straps by bulk. I have a shelf full of rolls of strap, because my strap machines, they make them by rolls. And then there's two CNC machines that the employees are working on. They're putting the strap and the buckle together to make the final product. And then we have a packaging station. We package them. So we try to do as much bulk as possible. That does reduce the cost per unit. So in terms of software, I do obviously Illustrator for vector, designing the designing the fabric. Sometimes I use Photoshop depending on what kind of design it is. Also just Final Cut Pro for like videos. I literally record with my phone. If you look at my videos, you'll see that like it's a good quality, but I do all with a phone. And a lot of people get surprised when I tell them that it's not even a camera. It's not like a professional camera. It's literally just a phone. And I use Final Cut to edit that. And then obviously use Photoshop to edit my thumbnails and things like that. So yeah, it's very simple. It's nothing crazy. I bought a light box from China. It's like 3x3x4 light box that does really well. And I take all my product photography there. So really simple in terms of what goes on the website or what goes on the shop. But when it comes to manufacturing, we do have some serious equipment, but it took us time to get to that point.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty serious workflow. And how many employees do you have in that workflow, and how do you find the right people?
Yeah. So we in shop, we have three. And then from home, there's like a girl that will be personalizing. So if somebody types in the dog collar and the phone number, she'll actually have to make it into a vector format that then the laser guy will engrave on the buckle. And because our process is fairly quick, the guy that does the laser machine can also be the guy that packages and the guy that does the strap. So it's like a very simple process. I really love, and I would recommend this to any listener, the book E-Myth. It's a great book. It basically talks about that McDonald's workflow, if you can apply that to your business. And that's what I've been trying to do as much as I can, to like, if you can almost hire anybody, they can get on that station, whether it's a laser machine, whether it's a CNC. And it sounds pretty cool, like, oh, I'm a CNC specialist. But it's like, it's actually very simple. It's like two buttons click, it's done. Two buttons click and done. And so so if I can do that, then no matter who I hire, it's not gonna matter. So, but right now I recently hired a guy that's gonna be kind of overseeing and upholding the processes that I created, so that I can focus on the new stores and new ventures that I have coming.
When and how do you use sales and coupons for your shop, and how can those be beneficial for growing sales and traffic?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So when I talk about, I in the beginning, I sell it at a loss. I actually don't, you know, the price will be original price, but then I'll create a really big discount and I'll do that. And if I have a new product, sometimes I'll bring, if there's a product that's really easy to make, I'll position it in my shop in such a way that when they want to check out my shop, they'll see the new product and that new product has a chance to be sold. So I'll sell this cheaper product that doesn't really cost me that much. Like this key fob, it really doesn't cost me that much to make. And so I'll sell it for really cheap, like $5.99. And people like, I mean, I lose money on that, but that's fine. It's like a rotisserie chicken thing. If you go to Costco, they don't make money on that thing, but they make money on all the other things you buy. So I'll do that for my like key fob and make it on a super big sale. But then they come to my store and they buy a matching dog collar because they realize, oh, I can match my dog collar, and they'll buy that one dog collar. So I'll use it for that. Also like Black Friday sales or any events or like Valentine's coming up, I'll put some sales there just to get some attention. Cause and plus I'll be adding new product of Valentine's too. So I do want that exposure.
And then what tools and support does Etsy have for sellers that new store owners should be aware of and use? And especially, are there any hidden or little known features and tools that they should be aware of?
Yeah. So Etsy does a really good job on working with, or at least providing the resources for just people that have never even know what SEO stands for. There's a lot of great resources like blogs and people they can follow on Etsy that explain how to do it. There's, and like I said, their analytics dashboard is really easy to use, and it tells you exactly what you need to look for. So Etsy's really good. Like I said, they're all about getting the little guy the shot. And so they've really tailored to that. Seller. And so, but the hidden one that I really like that I recently started using more and more is when you click, go on statistics and you go on the listing, you'll find this pie chart that shows you where your traffic is coming from, right? There will be one where it's ads and the one where it's organic and the one where it comes from your store, right? If they found another product and they came to your store and they looked at that product. And what you want to look for, if you just launched your product, you want to look for, let's say for 30 days, let's say a 30 day span, you take the first 7 days and you look at the pie chart and you'll see that your organic one might be small and your paid will be bigger. And then the biggest one will be from your store. And then you filter out to the last 7 days. And if that organic section of the pie grown, then you know the trajectory of that listing that, hey, if I keep advertising, if I keep spending money on advertisement, then it's going to keep growing. It's going to reduce how much I spend on ads and improve my profit margins. So that's a really neat thing that I started to use more and more when I do post new product.
Is that something that you would also use to determine maybe we need to cut back on this product? I guess that's something I haven't asked you about, is how do you determine if and when it is time to take a product out of the store?
Yeah, that's a good question. If that pie section of the pie does not grow and you're let's say, because when you're in the beginning, you even if you just run advertisements, sometimes you spend more on ads than you make, and you want to know, hey, is this going to be the same when in the future? And if that pie section hasn't grown, then yes. The other part, I actually started a cat store, you know, along with my dog store. I actually had to close that down because the buckles that I was using, though they were small on the dog collar that I used for the dog collar, they were too heavy for a cat. And so I wasn't ready for that. So I had to close down the store because I don't want to sell something to my customers that are falsely, you know, representing that this will be perfect for your cat. And so if you're starting to get bad reviews or people are not happy with it, just discontinue it. I also did that with my sublimated dog tags. They look really cool because you can actually make it like you can actually design with color, and it's like a floral dog tag, you know. But the problem is those dog tags could be easily scratched off and the phone numbers would be scratched off. So I had to discontinue that. So I would listen to the reviews as well on some of the, but and obviously the profit margins by looking at that pie chart.
And then obviously, you know, you just mentioned you don't want to have unhappy customers, but sometimes you do. And so have you ever had a dispute with a customer through Etsy? And what happens if someone wants to return a product or get a refund? What's that process like?
Yeah, it's always funny to see the thing is, the more sales you get, the more of them you get, because it's always a percentage, you know. And so, but we have a girl that does the customer service. I don't do it anymore, thank goodness, because it drove me nuts. But I made it very simple. There's like I made it very simple for a customer service gal. She basically, if the customer, like for example, if the product has been damaged, or the product fell apart, it's obviously all fall our fault and it falls into this category. And these are the steps to go about it. And yes, we will, refund it, return it. If the customer is just getting picky about little details, they'll fall into this category. We'll just ask them, hey, go ahead and return the product. And then we'll either send you a new one or refund it. If they've broken, if it's been past 90 days, then, we assume that their just dog has been really aggressive with it or something. It might have been their factor that it was included in this problem. So we make sure that they know that that's clear on our terms and conditions, like, hey, we don't offer refunds after 90 days and stuff like that. So we do have a very clear communication as much as we can, at least to the customer. And then when my customer service gal, she just pretty much takes that customer's complaint, puts it in the category that I wrote for her, and then she'll follow the process through. So that way she's not stressed about, all these people yelling at her when we do increase in sales, and, customers are treated fairly no matter where they are. And if we actually used to where a customer would complain, hey, my buckle fell apart. And we used to like, hey, go ahead and return it and then we'll send you another one. And they would be frustrated, like, hey, why do I have to do this? Why can't you just send me a new one? And then we're like, okay, let's change that. We'll just send them a new collar without requesting to be returned. But if it's something like somebody's picky about it, and it's really not that big of a deal, and it might actually be their fault. And sometimes we'll be like, just go ahead and send it to us. And they'll be frustrated. It's like, I need a dog collar while you guys send it back. And for those customers, we just either refund or, be courteous to just send them a new collar. So it's a very small amount. It's not a big budget cut. So I would just let them have it.
Then are there any strategies that you use to impress and delight your customers? The ones that aren't complaining, that is.
Yeah. Well, especially if they're return customers, right? Even if mm-hmm. if they screwed up, we like to really treat them because they've already brought us profit. And sometimes we'll throw candy in there and things like that. Other Etsy shop, by the way, they do a lot, and I probably should do this too, but they get all fancy on packaging and they like to put stickers and stuff like that. And it's a very common thing on Etsy. We throw in a collar in a package and ship it out. I find that it's better to cut the cost for them and not include random things. They appreciate it more at a cheaper price than, sell it for more and then include all these stickers and stuff like that. So, but we do try to do as much as we can if there is an issue. But if it's a flawless transaction, then obviously they won't need to contact us for any reason.
What have been your biggest challenges and struggles, and how did you overcome them?
Oh, that's a big question. So I think inventory is one of those big, I think every shop would have, I mean, every business would have this. Inventory has been such a big issue. You know, especially because we order buckles from China, they're heavy, they're not, it's not cheap on shipping. And so sometimes, I spend $10,000 on the product, but the shipping would be as much as $5,000 just on shipping. And it's just like ridiculous. So getting your inventory to a place where you ship it by sea and not by air is the best, but you would have to order larger quantities. And when you're just starting off, that's impossible. And so, but then I realized that you don't actually have to pay for the full invoice. You can actually just pay for the half of the invoice so that they start the manufacturing. And then once they're done with manufacturing, you pay for the second half. And by that time, you've saved up enough money to pay for the second half. That way you're getting your inventory replenished at a lot more friction-free manner.
So I've got one more question for you, and it's kind of our standard closing question. But before I ask it, I want to give you a chance to plug your YouTube channel for our listeners. So I'll hand it over to you to tell us about your YouTube channel.
Sure. Yeah. I get a lot of people ask me, what should I sell? How do I start? And I thought like, hey, why not just start a YouTube channel and just refer everybody to that? So my whole intention with my YouTube channel is to help people that want to sell on Etsy. Like I said, Etsy has provided me the opportunity to be where I'm at, to live out doing designing and creating products and not do physical therapy, and I want other people to have that opportunity. So if that interests you, I'm actually, like I said, I'm going to be opening up a whole new store, and my goal is to take it to the top 1%, but I'm going to document everything that I do. So if you want to go on that journey, go ahead and follow me or subscribe to that channel.
And what's the channel one more time?
Oh, sorry. Yes. It's Talk Shop. If you type in Talk Shop, you should find, if it doesn't come up, just write Etsy after that. So it's Talk Shop, one word.
Awesome. Well, Vlad, here's the last question for you. We like to end our interviews by hearing about your favorite business book. So what's your favorite business book and why? What impact did it have on you?
Yeah. Well, I'd say E-Myth is probably my it's literally a book written by a very complex businessman that understands complex ideas, but it communicates to a pie maker because she's overwhelmed with her business. And he communicates these very complex, you know, on a McDonald's level business concepts to somebody that makes pies for a living. And so it's really simple and you connect with it. And it talks about how there's three different hats you wear and you need to, so how to delegate and all of that just really freed up and gave me a better perspective. And so when I'm scaling and I'm getting more sales, I'm not destroying myself. My family's happy. I'm coming home at 5 and my laptop stays closed after 5. And so all of these things that make your life a lot more awesome, and you can actually take breaks. You can actually enjoy life after work or outside of work and not have to work, you know, 40 hours of, you know, in 2 days, you know, instead of a week. So
that's actually one I've never heard of. So that's going to the top of my reading pile. So I will definitely be looking that up.
Yeah.
Well, Vlad, thank you so much for stopping by the Upflip podcast. It's been such a great conversation with you. And to all of our listeners out there, make sure you check out Vlad's YouTube channel, Talk Shop, one word, where he talks about all things starting and growing an Etsy shop. Vlad, thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man.
And for everybody else, also make sure to check out our blog, upflip.com/blog, and also Upflip on YouTube. While you're on YouTube, after you've watched some Talk Shop videos, go watch some Upflip videos. And for more insight and incredible stories, be sure to tune in next week for the Upflip podcast.